Charlene will tell us more about what it will look like later. And so typically what we do is we have the retreat from 10 to about noon. We break for lunch. We walk down the street to Don Terrell's if you want to join us. It's very similar to Crepeville with a huge menu, and it's like you order at the counter and take a number. And we eat there, and then we typically resume between like 1:30 and 2. She'll tell you the day of the retreat. So, and then you go till 4. So that's what it will look like. And then we have one more class after that next Tuesday. Next week we have a special class. Jay is going to be teaching during the first half an hour of our normal karma class on Wednesday. And he's going to be teaching about using the book to keep our vows. So Elaine was talking about, you know, ethical moral discipline. And so this is a way that you can start cultivating that. And Jay is really inspiring when he talks about how he does his contemplations and keeps his book. And really, I think he really embodies how he brings Dharma into his everyday life and his everyday practice and every moment that he lives. So if you're able to make that, it should be really great. And then it's especially encouraged if you're planning to take your vows in a couple weeks. He'll really go into depth of how to practice keeping them. So that's going to be on the 19th from 6:30 to 7. And then Heather will finish up the rest of the night with her class on karma. Oops, I went backwards. Next Friday, we're doing our monthly breakfast at Friendship Park for the homeless. And so we need food, and we mostly need food, and we need cash. And then there's also opportunities for service. So Dasha in the back is the one coordinating it, and so ask her if you have any questions. And that's on Friday at 7 a.m. for service. And then she needs food the night before, so by Thursday night. I'm very excited, we have a new class and a new night. So on Monday nights, Sunil is going to be teaching a course on compassionate communication. It's going to be 4 Mondays, and I think, is it going to be a continuation of what we've already started?
Yeah,
or
build on that, yeah.
Yeah. Sure. And so if you enjoyed that class or know people in your life who would be interested or benefit from a class like that, definitely spread the word. So Monday nights is new for us, so we have to get the word out that we're going to be having class that night. So it's really exciting to add a third night. It's going to be 6:30 to 8:30, so same time, same place on Monday. And that's starting the second, I think that's the second Tuesday in May.
Second Monday.
Oh my gosh, I'm going to keep saying Tuesday because it's what I'm used to saying. And then starting May 2nd, which is the first Tuesday in May, Lama Ami is returning from her retreat, and she's going to be teaching Living Wise, Buddhist Essentials for Busy Lives. So, as Elaine was saying, we all have all this stuff to do, but that doesn't mean we can't fit a practice into our life. And so, that's going to be for six weeks, 6:30 to 8:30. And then, finally, we are totally donation run, so we have our donor bowls in the back, and so please give as you're able. And we have one more announcement for Pamela.
Hello, it's Pamela again, as Lauren mentioned. Yes, I'm always at this. As Lauren mentioned, we have a vow ceremony coming up at the end of the month. It's very exciting. We've got some new folks going to be taking their vows. And so Lama would love it if we could share some sort of exciting meal at the end of the vow ceremony. So if you're inclined towards buying yummy fruits or healthy snacks or baking delectable items and you feel empowered and motivated to bring something on, what month is this, April 25th, which I believe is the day of the vow ceremony, please do. And if you're the kind of person like me that needs to be held accountable by putting your name on something, there's a piece of paper at the back of the room. You can put your name on and tell us what you bring in. Thank you.
Very good.
Should I turn the projector off for the meditation, or do you need to project something?
No, you could turn it off, actually. So, you know, we can... we can listen to a lot of words, try to understand, but truly to have the experience through the power of meditation, the experience of our own mind. It's very useful. So I'd like to do this meditation simply on awareness of awareness itself. So I'll lead you into it. Sitting. Being in your body. Feel the places where your body touches the seat. Your hands. And then turn to your breath. Be aware when you breathe out. And back in again. Allow the out-breath to be a place where you simply let go. And on the in-breath, you brighten, enlighten. And strengthen your awareness. And on the out-breath, you let go. On the next out-breath, allow your awareness to go as far as possible to the left. Then bring it back to neutral. And send it out to the right. Coming back to neutral, send it out in front of you, as far as your imagination allows. back to neutral. Send it out behind you. To the center, send it down below, all the way through the center of the earth. Back to center. Now send it up as far as you can imagine. And coming back to center. Come right into your heart center and see there a sphere of light. Your awareness manifesting as a sphere of light. And then simply let it grow in all 10 directions. Until it goes as far as your imagination will allow and beyond. And then bring it right back in. And let it rest where it will. In a comfortable, natural place. And attend to that awareness. Just be. Your mind is like the sky. Just as nothing can rest on the sky, nothing can rest on your mind. Use the out-breath to let go. And the in-breath to bring you back, right here, right now. Now turn your awareness to the content. What is it that's marching across the sky of your mind? Just for a little while, what kinds of things arise? See if you can hold a thought when it comes. As you let go of thoughts, notice what is the mind like in between the thoughts. Look with wonder, strong looking. You really want to know, what is this mind? What is this awareness? Where is it? Does it have a center? What happens if you say, okay, I just let go? What you experience? What is awareness? You have some experience?
Presence.
Does it feel peaceful?
It's hard to tell sometimes because it's clouded by drowsiness or agitation.
Sinking into that cozy feeling. Yeah. Interesting, isn't it? I think the first time I did that meditation, I was quite surprised because I don't really think of going in one direction. Like, I was doing it when I was in long retreat, and I was in one little house, and my partner was in the house on the hill, and so when I took my mind out to the right, it was like going through the wall and on up to the house and then going beyond. It was interesting to see how I have always thought, kind of awareness is sort of within a certain realm, a certain area. But when you keep going and going and going, it's quite amazing, right? It doesn't really have a place. It goes wherever you send it. It is kind of interesting. Did anybody else have an experience with that? Yeah.
It was interesting when those footsteps stopped me at some point. It was like, for a moment, it was like losing the sense of the center, and then this these footsteps that are happening, tap, 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 tap. And there's some other noises happening, and it all got pretty confusing and disorienting because it wasn't, you know.
You weren't attached, you weren't going to that because you were going somewhere else, yes? Or
it,
what?
It was more like the frame of reference wasn't like I, me experiencing this meets. There's a felt center to all experience. And then there's a little bit of that relaxing a little bit, and then it's just things are emerging.
Being.
Yeah. This is disorienting because it's like all these sounds are happening, and it's like, oh shoot, what's going on?
Yes.
I was just going to say, thinking about going down was really kind of disorienting because I've never thought about being on the second floor and that there's like another room below us and then dirt and keep going down. And then eventually it was grounding, but it was kind of an odd sensation.
Yes, I can relate to that.
You can reach China.
And beyond. And beyond. You know, it is true when you think about that, you are going, you know, we have a certain spatial idea that things are solid. And recently with all the storms, right? In the winter, I live in the woods, right? I live, and so there's a lot of movement of earth slides happening. And you think you live on this solid hill, and the driveway is a solid driveway. And then, hello. It's all just, wow. So when we can keep our awareness on that level of things, being able to see through things, you know, things are not solid. They are not the way we think they are. Then it helps us to stop trying to hold it there, trying to keep it like we think it is. Because that's really the cause of suffering. Yes?
So in the beginning you started with the statement that just like clouds do not stick to the space, nothing sticks to your mind. That made a huge impact. I have heard that before, but it is one thing to read, but another thing to hear that when you're meditating. So that made a big difference, because when a thought comes, you know, previously our habitual mind is, oh, the thought has come, now it sticks. But you, what you said was, it doesn't stick. So when you're not struggling with that, it doesn't stick.
That's right.
Yeah.
And similarly, I felt like when he asked us to try to hold on to a thought, I realized that as soon as like I would repeat whatever the phrase was, like my neck is stiff, like I would try to like repeat it, but then as soon as I would have said it two or three times, I would be like, it's not true anymore.
You see, these are very, very useful, I call them ahas. You see, the more you become familiar, the more you begin to see that it is, there really is nothing to hold on to, you see. And that can be disorienting because we want so much to have some kind of little nice box that we can put everything in, and we can be this way, and we'll always be this way, and we make it all nice. We'd like that, but that's not true. So for us to become not only familiar with, but comfortable with the fact that things are constantly changing and that they are ephemeral, they're ethereal, they are not solid, they are in flow all the time. But we do, you know, we do like to have it solid. When we see the earth move, and we see it's not solid, that's really physically seeing that that's true. But when, like a bird doesn't leave a mark when it flies through the sky, The same thing is true with our thoughts, our feelings, our emotions. They will arise because we have no control over what's arising in our mind. You cannot say, I'm going to sit down here and now I will be free of thought. Now, strong concentration. You can say it, but the job, that's the mind of the job. Mind's job is to think. You know, it does think. So it's a question of being able to see that what is arising doesn't have any solidity. It has no essence. It has no ground. And the more you see that, you can see it on your cushion. You know, you see it there, like you have an aha, oh. And when you see it like a bird flying, you know, leaves no mark. Behind the cloud, nothing stays in the sky. And you see that time and time and time again. You let go time and time and time again on your cushion. Then, when you're in the world, you have a chance. Because you see, when we're in the world and we're doing our things, we get captivated by a solid world, by things being the way we believe them to be. That is a really irritating person. We believe that. But in the same way that a thought cannot stay in your mind, neither is that person irritating or desirable. That too is in your mind. And that's brilliant, really, because now you have the ability to transform it. When you know that it's not solid, that it's a product of your mind and it's a product of your habitual cultivation, you can say, wait a minute. Now I'm going to apply an antidote to that, because being irritated is unpleasant. So I'm not going to cultivate that irritation. And the reason why we get irritated is because we want something other than what is. But as soon as we can be whatever is, it is, and it has risen just for us. It's our own karma ripening, and this is what we talked about. This is karma. This is karmic appearances, they say. These are our karmic appearances. Whatever is appearing before us, we created the cause to see, to feel, to experience. So if we created the cause for beauty, rejoice in that so that you get more beauty. If you created the cause for irritation and doubt and pride, the states of mind that are unpleasant, apply an antidote to that. You know, start right now, just say, oh, there's irritation. Because it came, you didn't conjure it up. We don't do that. We don't get up in the morning and say, I think around 10 o'clock I'm going to get irritated. But at 10 o'clock we might be irritated, right? So it comes. It comes when the circumstance presents itself. And it comes because we have been irritated before. We believe there's somebody here that should have something different than what's appearing. And both are false. And that's what this wisdom is, this emptiness is. And the way to actualize that is to intellectually understand it and apply antidotes to the states of mind that are unpleasant when they arise. So it's all right to want a nice dessert. And you go to the restaurant to get the nice dessert, the one that you had the last time you were there. And you're excited to go get that. And that's all right. You get that piece of apple pie, delicious, and you enjoy. But if you go to the store to get the apple pie and they don't have apple pie, then what? You see, you think your happiness is in the dessert. But it's not. It's interesting to think like that. You know, if we think like that, we challenge our reality on a continual basis. As long as you're going along perfectly happy, and you're helping other people, and you're perfectly happy, good. That doesn't mean you don't have to alter anything. You're just aware of your life, and everything is moving right along. But when the rubber doesn't meet the road, that's when we have a chance to really practice. And it's brilliant. When somebody is accusing you of something, particularly what you didn't do, somebody says you didn't do your job right, and you did your best, you know, you see this kind of strong eye arising, and it's an opportunity to see if there really is someone there. Lama Zopa Rinpoche said to me once when we were having lunch, I had the opportunity to be his attendant for the day, so I made lunch, and we were having lunch, and at the end of lunch he said, "You know, I can't practice." And I said, "Yeah." Of course, I knew there was going to be a teaching. And he said, "Everybody's so kind to me. I always get the best food. I always get the nicest place to stay. And everybody says nice things to me." He says, "But your enemy, now they're the ones who are your very best friend. The ones who point out to you where you still have work to do." But we tend to surround ourselves with people who like us. So it's excellent to be able to use the teachings on karma are really beautiful for being able to transform what's coming in our world that we don't like. You know? Because if we believe that we created the cause to experience every result, then what's appearing before us is an opportunity. It's karma that we created. It's a seed that we planted. You plant an acorn and you're going to get an oak tree. We preferred a peach, but we didn't plant a peach seed. So we have to plant the seeds that we want to ripen. And if we see a seed ripening that we don't want, then we apply an antidote. And this is why it's really, to understand how karma works, that it is like a boomerang, but it doesn't ripen immediately. That's the problem. You know, it doesn't happen right now that I've killed that mosquito and now my back's going to break. You know, it doesn't happen that way. But it's a seed there. It's a seed because it was anger or irritation that caused us to do that, to take that life. And that, this is the thing about karma, and I think this is really interesting. The first law is that karma is definite. In other words, it's certain. If you plant an acorn, you're going to get an oak tree. So the second thing is that it expands. That means if I plant an acorn and I water it, it's really going to grow and it's going to get bigger and bigger and bigger. And that's why we talk about mitigating factors or purifying karma. When we make a mistake and we know that we're going to get something we don't want as a result, we have an opportunity right now in that moment to purify that. And we'll talk about that, we'll do some of that on Saturday. But the thing is, karma is also empty. Okay? And this is very interesting. Your mind, your true nature, is Buddha nature. If you think, why is it that purification works? Because the seed that you planted in your mind when you yelled at that person to be yelled back at, right? If you immediately have a regret and you do a mitigating remedy, you're not gonna yell again. You're not gonna get the result of that. This is what happens. A Buddha's mind, an enlightened mind, irritation never arises in that mind. Hatred never arises in that mind. It's a pure mind, a mind of love and compassion. And it's because it was cultivated. That's what arises. It's really deep. And I'm digging myself in. But it is, it's interesting to think about, because when you're doing purification practices, for instance, there's a purification practice where you do prostrations to the 35 confession Buddhas, right? One time I was doing prostrations to the 35 Buddhas, and it came to me that what I'm doing is I'm becoming, you think, thoughts arise of mistakes that you made, you know, things that you did that were harmful. When you're doing prostrations or you're reciting mantras, whatever you're doing as a purification practice, unbidden, something will come. Something, how you teased that little redhead kid on the playground when he was five, when you were five. That thought arises. And so you're purifying that by saying, I never want to do that again. You know, I'm sorry that I did that. And I think what happens is you become a non-doer of those negative actions. It's like I'm a non-smoker, I'm a non-liar, you know, I'm a non-harmer. I just don't engage in that activity anymore. And the more you imbue your mind with being a non-doer of that, then the thought to do it doesn't come. If you were ever a smoker and you quit smoking, I thought I would never stop wanting a cigarette. Well, the hardest thing I ever did was to quit smoking. And I quit probably four or five times before I finally quit. I mean, that was a gazillion years ago. But nonetheless, I had to do it by imbuing my mind with the fact that I was a non-doer of that activity. I would go into a restaurant, and this was when you could still, there was the smoking and the non-smoking. And I would say, as soon as I went in, non-smoking, you know. I was identifying with the non-smokers. And I would turn my, I would be repulsed by cigarette smoke. I would have to tell myself, you know, oh, people smell like an ashtray, you know. So I don't want to do that activity, so I become a non-doer of that activity. Get on the airplane. You used to be able to smoke on an airplane. Yeah. But you had to sit in the back. So, you know, I'm sitting back there with the toilet, you know, smoking. Now I get to sit in the front. So this is the way it is with karma. You become a non-doer of those activities, and you see yourself becoming a non-doer. You see yourself, you catch yourself not exaggerating. You pull your mind right back and you say, wow, no, it wasn't really 50, it was only 10. You see yourself, you correct yourself. And before long, you just don't do those behaviors. It doesn't arise in your mind to do them. It's not like you're not purposely not doing them. It just doesn't arise to do it. You wouldn't even think of doing it. And that's what happens the more and more and more that you practice. So karma is definite. You're going to get that oak tree if you plant the acorn, as long as there aren't any mitigating factors. And it's going to grow if you don't do something about it. And that's beautiful when you're doing good deeds, right? And you can fertilize those by rejoicing. And you can rejoice in somebody else's good deed and get those good seeds planted in your own mind. Lama Zopa used to say, that's the easiest way to collect merit. Rejoice in somebody else's goodness. You don't have to do the action. You're just rejoicing that somebody else was doing it. You know, somebody does a retreat, you go, oh, that's so great. Look, you did that day long. Great, I'm rejoicing. So you get, the story goes that the party line is that if you have the same realizations as the person for whom whose actions you're rejoicing in, then you get the same merit. If you have more realizations than the person, you get double. And if they have more realizations than you, you get half. But that's all right. I'll take half of His Holiness's. Yeah, so then the third one is that if you don't create the cause, you will not experience the result. So it doesn't matter whether you hold down three jobs. If you haven't created the cause to have money, you can't keep it. You might get an inheritance, and within a year it's gone because you had health issues or your car broke down, or you know, money comes, but it just goes right through your fingers. You want a good job, but you just can't get one. You want people to believe you, but they don't believe you. So we have to, by realizing that, we continue to create the causes that we want, the results that we want, create the causes for the results that we want. So, and the alternative is also true, the opposite is true. If you do create the cause, you will experience the result. If you don't do anything to mitigate that. So if you don't purify it, or if you do a good deed and you don't dedicate it to enlightenment, you can lose it through the power of becoming angry. Lama Zopa used to say how you burn up eons of positive karma when you get angry. So as much as possible, we refrain from that. So those four things, keeping that in mind, keeping in mind our karma, then we think, okay, I'm the one that's creating my future. I remember hearing a teacher once talking about karma, and a student saying, I remember he was really in the teacher's face. He says, are you trying to tell me that when a woman is raped, that she created the cause for that? You know, that in his words, it was her fault. That's big to look at that. You know, that's big. The things that have happened to us in our life, to have a look at that, what that means. And then how do you respond to that, to harm that has, the ways that you have been harmed, how do you respond to that? When you don't see in this life how you have created the cause to experience that. So for one, it's to think it's not just karma ripening in this life, it's from the past. And if I can think that I created the cause to experience it, I can also think I finished that karma. You know, I created the cause for that and I finished it. But the person who was the perpetrator, now they're creating the cause to experience that in their future. So that allows compassion to arise in your own mind. When somebody is yelling at you and you think, wow, you know, I did something that's creating the cause for this person to yell at me, and now they're creating the cause to be yelled at. So then you can take it, so to speak. You can turn, it's a tool that you can use to turn around your suffering, and not holding on to the poor me. I have been wronged. So it actually becomes empowering, because we can get over it, or we can hold on to it for the rest of our life. But we can see, when you see how the mind is this pure, amazing awareness, we don't have to hold on to our past. we can create a beautiful future. And that is one of the ways we go through a forgiveness in our own mind, a forgiveness for those to those who have wronged us, who have harmed us. And if we can do that, it just gets rid of a huge burden in our own mind. So it's a practice to do. And it's hard to believe that it's 8:30. Because I didn't finish. Oh, is that true? I didn't finish.
We have 11 slides left.
Okay, well, let's just go to the dedication, because we'll come back next week to
slide 12.
I can't help it.
Oh, you've been over these slides. This is all about karma.
Yeah. You did it anyway.
Oh, I did go about karma. Yeah, I did do karma.
Yeah, and now we'll just suffering.
That's
so
right.
Maybe it's
we'll be talking about suffering on Tuesday. Won't that be fun? But I did want to tell you about Saturday. You know, one of the things that you can do in your life to practice is to have a day. You make a determination, all right, now I'm going to do a retreat. You don't have to go anywhere. You do it at home. So by thinking, for instance, let's just say you're going to do a Saturday retreat. You decide you're going to do some intense practice. You're going to do a day of practice. So you, Friday night, you make a determination. You don't go out and party until midnight. You go to bed early, and you wake up in the morning and begin your day of practice. So that's what I would like this Saturday to be, is kind of like how to go through a day of practice, a day retreat, a little retreat that you could do at home on your own once in a while. If you did it once every 3 months, you took a day, you'll be surprised at how much impact it will have on your life. Really. And then you might find, wow, I think I'm going to do a weekend. Mm-hmm. I'm going to do the whole weekend. And then you might say, oh, I think I'll do a week, 10 days. And lo and behold, I'm going to try a month. Eventually, you know, in the future. But start programming your mind to be able to do that kind of practice, that you need time out to be able to go deep enough to have profound experiences. So just having one day is really helpful. So we'll do that on Saturday. We'll do we'll go through what it would be like to get up at home and do a day. Okay? So it's excellent what we have done here. I'm going to try to get to... All right, so this is how we dedicate all this virtue that we have done. We dedicate it, we put it in the bank so it's never lost. And it goes and yields the highest return, perfect enlightenment. Okay, that's the account. We're putting it into our enlightenment account. All right. By merit of this virtue, may I become Buddha and lead all beings, everyone, born arise and grow, and may that born not decline, but increase more and more. So let's let's also dedicate to the long lives of all of our spiritual teachers, and that all our Dharma friends might gain the realizations. And anyone in your life who needs a little extra help right now, send some good energy to them. Anyone who's passed away, may they have a fortunate rebirth. May all who are sick be healed. And may there be no war. Thank you.